Welcome to Geek Actually, episode 87 for the 5th of June, and I got to keep the energy level up because Josh has none.
Oh, no, I'm good now. I'm halfway through this thing. Look at the size. It's like one giant battery.
It's good, isn't it?
It's huge.
It's energy goodness.
It's intimidating, actually.
Yeah.
All right, let's get on with this. All right.
Maybe for some of us.
All right, so I'm David McVeigh, and this is my madhouse. Welcome. Have fun. For the next hour and a bit, we're going to be doing a little bit of geek news, but before we do anything, I need to say a special thank you to all of those who helped contribute to get the little geek his present. Photos of him holding his prized Final Cut Express are now on the site at geekactually.com. And I want to just, once again, we put all your names on the card and they're on the site, but I'll just list these people off one more time just to say thank you. Lisa, Mirren, Sarah, Katrina, Josh, Celine, Ben, Helen, Deacon, Tony, and Geek Betty all helped get this for him. So thank you very much. He was very, very happy. And it is the first piece of official software that is registered in his name, so he's very, very impressed.
Yeah, boy.
All right, so why are we here? This is Geek Actually Podcast. This is basically our weekly dose of geek. We do a little bit of tech, we do a bit of film, and in tech this week we've got the Facebook CEO sweating up a storm at D8, and iPad knockoffs are here, Josh.
Yeah.
Yay! And in entertainment, we're going to talk about Del Toro leaving The Hobbit, and Marvel is one leaky boat, let me just tell you. We've had more Marvel leaks this week than I think we've had since they started. I am joined this week by Celine. How are you, Celine?
Oh, very good, thank you.
I just noticed on the show notes it still says Ben. I didn't adjust that part. Celine Roberts, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
That's good. And Josh Philpott, I know you're lacking in energy, but
no, energy is good at this stage. I'm still working on the fact that I've lost my wallet, which means that therefore I have no way of getting money for the rest of the weekend. Bar that, I'm having a fantastic day.
Fair enough.
And I know it's all thanks to you, Dave, and this giant can of Red Bull. Product placement for the win.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it is my pleasure. Anything to get your energy level up for the show. All right. Now, we're also going to, a little bit later on, have our feature review, as we always do. This week, we're going to be reviewing A Nightmare on Elm Street. The remake by Samuel Bayer.
Is it actually called A Nightmare on Elm Street?
A Nightmare on Elm Street. What did I say?
You did not know this?
No, I didn't know. It just had an A in front of it, that's all.
Yeah, no, the original's called A Nightmare on Elm Street, too.
It is.
Not on my box set, but...
Well, your box set is wrong. All right, so... Now, the other thing we're going to talk about before we get into any news is... We had a little bit of sad news. Now, this is actually last week's news. It happened just before we started recording last week. We didn't put it in the show because we were kind of full already. And as you know, if you've listened, it was a 2-hour and 9-minute show last week. But Gary Coleman died last week. Gary Coleman, for those who don't know, was, what was his name? Arnold? Arnold, in Different Strokes. You know, what you talking about, Willis?
What you talking about?
He actually died, unfortunately, last week of a brain hemorrhage. And there's been a bit of controversy about his death, actually, because apparently his wife, I use air quotes, signed the order to terminate life support on him. And it turns out they were actually legally divorced when she signed this. But it's all been cleared up because apparently they had a long-standing agreement and she was in charge of his medical decisions, even if they weren't married.
Okay.
So it has been cleared up and she did have authority to do that, or so I understand. So we'll come back to that. But the for me, the sadder news, unfortunately, I mean, but all death is sad, and we do say, you know, rest in peace, Gary Coleman. But this week we lost the, at the time, living legend, now he will be just legend, legendary Dennis Hopper. Mm-hmm. Now, Dennis Hopper has been fighting prostate cancer, I believe, for a long time now, for about a year. I mean, last time I saw him in a public forum, he looked really awful. But he actually died of complications of prostate cancer this week at the age of 74, and he will be missed. I mean, Dennis Hopper was a legend.
Yeah.
I mean, this Gary Coleman, yes, he was a huge star in the 70s and so forth, but Hopper is a legend.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the man who directed Easy Rider and was in Apocalypse Now, and I mean, just, you know. So I think we should all raise our hands and basically say, you know, get your fuck on, Mr. Hopper, because yes. He was a legend, you know?
I will drink that.
So, all right. So, with all that sad news out of the way, let's get on to tech news. Now, I'm still on Facebook. Last week, we had Ben and Josh trying to talk me off the ledge, metaphorically speaking. And
see, if I had been there, I would have been pushing you. I would have given you a
push. I started.
Yeah, no, Josh tried to push me off. I was wooed back because...
When that didn't work, I went to the next person.
I was wooed back by people on Facebook who said, get off the metaphorical ledge. We have metaphorical cookies. And, of course, that started
it's a safe thing to do, really.
Yeah. And that started a whole thread about people talking about how yummy metaphorical cookies are. But, you know, go figure. Now, the reason why I'm still on Facebook is because Zuckerberg did... announced changes to privacy last week. Mm-hmm. He did simplify the privacy down. I did finally get those changes. I've had a look at it. I've locked my Facebook account off completely. So really, if you want me on Facebook, go to the fan page.
Oh.
I'm not really looking at the personal page at all or the personal news feed. I'm not interested that much. Do not send me game requests or hugs or kisses, or I have all of that turned off. So there is no point.
You don't want to get a gift?
I don't want gifts. I don't want anything.
Virtual gift.
The only thing that goes onto my Facebook is a message if you have something that you need to say to me. So other than that, everything else is locked off. I found out you can actually lock off your friends lists as well now.
Oh, really?
So you can actually lock it down so that you don't even display who your friends are, which I've done. So, yeah, there's not a lot to see on my personal. Go to the facebook.com/geekactually, though. We do put stuff up there. Okay, so with that, I think we're just going to swap the order a little bit here because I think going from Facebook, I made a mistake in the show notes. We really needed to go from Facebook to Facebook. Mm-hmm. And of course, the other thing that happened in Facebook news this week was that Mark Zuckerberg took to the stage of All Things Digital, or D8 as it's called. Now, this is actually following, mind you, the day before was Steve Jobs, who was very eloquent and to the point. And said everything, and I didn't agree with all of his points, but he was very clear about his message that he wanted to talk about and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that Steve Jobs did say that I thought was fascinating was the fact that he referred to computers, as we know them, as pickup trucks, and basically said in the days of when we were all in, you know, using utilitarian vehicles, pickup trucks were what we needed because we needed to do heavy lifting, basically. Yeah. He says, nowadays in cars, everybody wants power steering and power brakes and, you know, it's just a vehicle to get you from point A to point B. We don't all need pickup trucks. And yes, there is still a place for those pickup trucks, but everybody wants basically things like tablet computing because they just want something sleek and fast that does the basic things. And that analogy is really clever. Now, of course, what he's saying is you only need an iPad. I don't agree with that. There's Android tablets and all sorts of stuff coming out, which we're going to talk about in a minute.
He's just trying to get by.
But
He's just an honest, hardworking man trying to get by. Straight.
Although I love the fact that he still played the underdog card. So all the way through it, he's kind of like, you know, oh, well, you know, we're trying our best.
You're a billionaire!
Apple has currently in its coffers right now $46 billion in cash. All right, we're not even talking about stock, we're talking about cash. This is not a small company, and it really does have enough money to do as much R&D as it wants. So that's beside the point. The next day, Mark Zuckerberg took to the stage where he was interviewed by Swisher and Mossberg.
I love this. It's cringe-worthy.
And he literally, and I say literally in the truest sense, started to melt. and I have a picture on screen right now of his sweaty face. And the video is embedded on geekactually.com. So go have a look. It is probably the most uncomfortable thing you will see.
It's just one of those things when you watch it, you feel embarrassed for
absolutely.
Them. Absolutely. Like, I almost didn't make it to the end. I couldn't. It was just getting... It went from bad to worse. It was just like... And the fact that they comment on him sweating.
Yeah,
like, well, you're sweating a lot there. Well, do you want to take off
your Swisher says, do you want to take off your hoodie?
And it's like, he's freaking out. He's like, no, I don't want to take off.
I never take off my hoodie.
I never take off my hoodie. And it's just like, oh, no, stop.
Yeah, no, it's very uncomfortable to watch. And actually, at the point where she stops and says, would you like to take off your hoodie? Mm. He actually wipes his hand across his forehead.
And he says something like, oh, boy.
He's dripping in sweat. I mean, and of course, he's being grilled about privacy and so forth. And he's rambling. His answers are all over the place. He can't seem to make eye contact with anybody. It's just he looks really uncomfortable. And as I said in the article on Geek, actually, it looks like a high school kid who's been brought in front of the principal. You know, 26 years old. He's really not good at this part. And ironically... Last time he was on All Things Digital, which was in D6, he was on stage being confronted about privacy issues. So this is obviously a trend that we're seeing here. But The last thing I want to say about him literally melting in front of everybody was when they finally did convince him to take off his hoodie, because if you've ever seen photos of Mark Zuckerberg, he doesn't take off his hoodie. He's always in this hoodie. Now, this was probably the most disturbing part of the entire event, though, was because when they took it off, he has a printed logo inside the hoodie. And they all kind of went, "What is that?" And he went, "Oh, that's the company motto." And all I could think of was, apparently it's a corporate hoodie. You can't buy these. They're only for Facebook employees. And it's very cult of Facebook. Mm. It's very odd. And it's basically got this logo, very Illuminati cult of Facebook thing inside
style.
Scientology. It's ooh, that's... And he looks really embarrassed about her holding it up.
I love
that
she goes, "Oh, look, it's like a cult." It's just like, oh.
So if you want to go see this video, it's only an excerpt from the whole video. You can find the entire... and what I thought was interesting is if you go to All Things Digital now, they actually have the interview and they've edited it. So they've actually kind of taken out a lot of the uncomfortable moments.
Oh, really?
They're shortening it for time, I think, but it doesn't make it feel quite as uncomfortable. The clip we've got is an uncut clip.
It's just
and
awkward.
It's also from All Things Digital because they've got excerpts, but it is well worth having a look at and you will squirm.
According to the chat room, a hoodie equals criminals.
Hell yeah. I mean, God, talking about Harry Brown, I can't fucking walk past people with hoodies on without having an anxiety attack.
I don't know. I've got a hoodie. I don't think you have anxiety.
I do too, but I still freak out.
You freak out when you wear it, right? You see yourself in a mirror.
I'm
and go,
like,
oh my
God. Don't mug me.
All right. So from Zuckerberg and Facebook, one giant, let's go to Google, the other giant, and basically say we really should bring up tech war music at this point because war has escalated because here's a little graphic that I knocked up. Google has basically phased out or banned Windows from internal machines. Now, this is something along the lines of 20 to 30,000 users just in the factory itself. This was confirmed because Leo Laporte has an ex-employee who has just gone to work for Google. And, of course, the first thing they said to her was, "Do you want a Linux or a Mac machine?" Mm. No Windows. They basically claim that Windows has security flaws that they can't live with anymore. The Beijing hack that happened at the beginning of the year apparently is a known flaw in Internet Explorer, and that allowed them in. And basically Google said at this point, no more.
Yeah.
Now, my first thought was, cynical old me, my first thought was, well, this is because Google's making their own operating system.
Yeah.
But no, they've actually countered that and saying that their operating system isn't for in-house use anyway, because it's just a cloud operating system. It really is just for netbooks. It's not going to be a hard-working operating system. It is literally a browser.
Yeah.
But they're saying that they're moving all of their employees to Linux or Mac OS because they can't trust Windows anymore. Now, Windows has automatically come out and countered this by saying, no, really, we're the most secure operating system in the world. It's like, show us proof positive and evidence on that, and then maybe we'll talk. But it's a big move. And all I could think was a company like Google making this sort of gesture means other big companies might make this kind of gesture. And if you start looking at this, are we seeing the end of the Windows dominant desktop? At the moment, there's still 9 in 10 desktops use Windows. So are we starting?
I think we've been seeing a lean towards that for a while now.
Oh, I agree.
As someone that's kind of been on the forefront lately of the iPad system, and you have stories that we will cover on this later, but it is amazing. Just like people are saying, you know, iPads, yeah, personal use, not good enough, whatever. You guys can say whatever you want. I am literally talking to business people that are coming in and buying 20 or 30 of these at a time. They're not doing it on the same day because you can only buy two at a time.
Yeah.
But they'll come in as a group of like five people and grab two each, and then they come back the next day and do the same thing. I thought it was all going to be people trying to buy these things to resell.
It's the ultimate portable machine.
Dude, so many places. I've been talking to guys. There's one set of people that do web design. They've got one for each one of their people because they're all planning to create websites now that all work on iPad formats. They do all their editing, like WordPress and stuff like that, through it. And I will have you know, because I have run WordPress on them very many times, that it is an absolute joy to use.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just like those sort of things. When you start getting that portableness out into the market, and then on top of that, the fact that Mac is now becoming basically my daily purchase thing, more than a PC in a lot of ways, you just start saying, yeah, it's coming.
It's moving.
And it's been coming for a while.
But what we really need now is another alternative operating. We need somebody to take the Linux system and build something like a Mac interface on it. Mm. Because the problem with Linux is it's still a little bit too complicated for its own good. I had a friend who was on Ubuntu.
Sorry, Dave. Pull that back. There is nothing simple about that.
No. Let me just put it this way. Day-to-day, everyday use of Linux is actually not that hard. But if you need to do anything to that machine, like install software or anything like that, it's extra steps in directions that I just feel like you don't need to do.
Interestingly enough, let's have a little, like, 1 second side wait for that.
Sidebar!
Sidebar off to the side. Now, personally, I used to have, before I had the netbook, I currently have the white one. I had the original black
PC.
Now, that thing there was basically Linux only. You could install Windows on it, but it took up 3/4 of the drive. Now, that particular device I then passed on to an ex-girlfriend. Now, that particular device, I installed a Linux program, and it was fantastic until she wanted one program installed. It took me a week to install one program.
Yeah, because you've got to download the jar files and the this and that, and it's just all just too complicated, you know?
No, there is nothing.
Yeah, so what they need to do is simplify. I mean, and let's face it, your chat room has already said this. Yeah, OS X is based on Unix. The core of OS X is Unix, and it has the Finder interface put on top of it, which makes it really easy to use. But at its base, it's Unix, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Now, Linux is just a variation of Unix for all intents and purposes. Yes, it's been rewritten and so forth, but it basically is cored similar to Unix. So why can't we create something like the OS X Finder, something as simple as the OS X Finder, to work on that core?
Mm.
And the problem is that they're all trying to emulate Windows. I think they need to stop trying to emulate Windows and try and look at emulating something else.
I'm looking forward to the next major design change.
Me too. I
mean, yeah.
Yeah. I believe competition is good. I don't want to see Apple just dominate the desktop world. I don't want to see Windows dominate the internet.
I think we need to move away from this whole concept of a taskbar. I'm sick and tired of it.
Well, it's funny you should mention that because we have a very, very important story coming up. But we'll come back to that one in just a minute because that is fascinating stuff. Because there is a scientist who actually agrees with you completely that the days of the one-on-one interaction with a computer with a mouse and a keyboard is over, and he believes that it's time to move in a different direction.
That's
what we call a tease, and we'll come back to that in just 1 second, because while we're talking about iPads and talking about this whole move into the sports car and how people are buying dozens of them at a time, we know that this is a popular device. It's already sold 2 million units around the world, but it didn't take long, 2 months. And we're already seeing the knockoffs hit. So the knockoffs are all based in the Android operating system. And I actually have a little bit of video. Now, this video is from Japanese television. So be aware that you're not going to understand a word that they're saying. But it's the images that are important. And this video is actually embedded at geekactually.com. So if you're listening to the audio, you can go have a look at this video. But I'll just turn the sound down because we really don't need to hear them. They look like iPads. Okay, but have a closer look, on closer inspection. Here we go, ready? Zoom in. And it's actually iPad. And here's the instruction manual for iPad. Look at that. The design is different. It's got the Android interface on it. Just kill the sound altogether.
USB ports. Wow, look at that. That's awesome.
All the standard ports. Now, this video is very short. It's about to end. There we go. It's finished. The video is a lot longer than that. It goes on. It actually shows them using it. And the thing that really occurred to me about it, though, was that it's really, really slow. Mm-hmm. And because it's obviously using Atom processors and stuff like that. And they're clicking on, they're touching icons on the screen. And they actually kind of flash like on Windows. You know how they kind of flash? And then there's a beat, and then the program starts, and you sit there and go, "Yeah, that's not an iPad. iPads are fast. You know? I mean, you click on that thing, it's just open."
I wonder how much they are, in relation to the cost, if they are super, super cheap.
It's funny you should ask that.
If you didn't care that it was slow, it would cost like, I don't know, like something the equivalent of like $50 or something.
It has USB ports on it. Can I add how awesome that is?
Okay, well the iPad, which you can buy in Shenzhen, is approximately $126.
Awesome.
It's not too bad.
It's about a fifth of the price. Apple iPad. And there's a whole bunch of them. Apparently there's a slew of clones
and
so forth.
I can't wait for them to take off. This is the whole thing that people don't understand. This is only the beginning. Yeah. A year from now, it's like half of what we use.
And this is the thing we all get very excited about, and people will have accused us on this show of being a little bit Apple-centric with the whole iPad. So It's not the iPad as such. The iPad is just the first in what we hope is a new generation
I don't even use the word hope anymore, dude. No, well, I honestly don't. Yeah. This is way past hope stage. We're talking 2 million, and we are talking about, you know what? You know what my entire yesterday was? My entire, like, work of yesterday was literally answering the phone probably about 6 times an hour.
Yep.
Waiting for that part in the conversation. Hi, it's Josh. And then you just wait, and it's like, I was wondering if you have iPad. No, we don't have them. No, we don't. We don't know when we're getting them. Stop asking. Go away. Click. 5 minutes later, same thing again. They are waiting for it. And this is just my story. Yeah. I'm not a busy store.
And there's a conference about to take place in Asia, which is a very big conference where all the Korean companies and stuff will basically start talking about it. There is something like 30 to 40 new tablets, all Android-based, all in development, and they're all going to be hitting by the end of this year. We are going to see a slew of tablets come out. And these aren't just iPad clones. These are proper, independent tablets all to themselves, just like we saw a whole bunch of touch phones come out a year right after the iPhone came out. Everybody's ready. Mm-hmm. This has been coming for a long time. People in the chat room are saying nobody cares about the MS tablet. Absolutely. Windows 7, even though it has touch capabilities built into it, does not work as a touch device. It's too crowded. It's too busy.
We've used these interfaces because they are around. They're on these computers already. And they are just horrible. With the Microsoft Windows machines, one of my biggest problems is the fact that if you're going to have a system that we know so well and all that sort of thing, and then you implement touch technology, don't change the way you interact with icons. Because it's not even a double-click system now. Because if you double-click, it comes up with a tick box in the top corner, which I don't even know what that's supposed to do. I'm trying to show people how easy these things work, and I'm double-clicking going, wait, no, hold on, this isn't...
this is just embarrassing.
No, we need to redesign.
Well, somebody actually said, I was listening to a podcast the other day. I can't remember which one it was. I listened to so many, but I was listening to a podcast the other day, and somebody was saying, why isn't Microsoft developing tablets using the new Windows Phone 7? Yeah, Windows Phone 7 interface. Because
can we just get them a new marketing team, please? I'm sorry, but that is the most embarrassing thing to say ever. It's just...
The name is just does not roll off the tongue.
No, it doesn't at all.
So why aren't they using that as their mobile interface? If it is so good, because everybody by all accounts is talking about Windows Phone 7 as being the most brilliant interface in the world, why aren't we seeing that being used more?
Or even as a tablet system.
That's what I'm talking about, on like tablet devices. You know, they keep wanting to put full computers, full Windows onto tablets. People don't want that. They don't want to use a stylus to start with.
Oh, God, no.
That's not intuitive. And we already know that they don't sell because tablet machines died on their ass for years until the iPad came along, until they added multi-touch.
Yeah.
It's touch that makes them work. Anyway, speaking of interfaces, let's talk a little bit about... we got rid of that story. Let's talk a little bit about John Underkoffler, which is probably one of the best names ever. John Underkoffler was hired as the technical advisor for Minority Report. Now, we've all seen Minority Report, I hope, and if we haven't, you need to go out and see it. Now, Minority Report has its problems, and you know it's not necessarily the greatest film ever made. It's a really good film. I really enjoy it. But one of the things, the most dazzling things in the entire film, the thing that everybody always remembers, is when he gets to the computer, puts on the little black gloves, and does the whole touch interface in space. And we all went, oh, that's so cool.
Oh my God, you
know?
Oh my.
And of course, at that time, it was CG graphics and so forth. But what we didn't know at that time was that the technical advisor was actually using Minority Report as his R&D. And they were actually developing that exact interface. And it is in use today. A couple of companies are using it. And he went to TED this year. This was actually shown, this demonstration was in February. It's only just made its way onto the net now. Here is a little bit of it. Now, it's actually about a 15-minute demonstration, and he goes into all sorts of stuff, but this is just a taste for you. This whole video is embedded at gigactually.com, so you can watch it there. But this is John Underkoffler demonstrating.
We can actually exercise 6 degrees of freedom, 6 degrees of navigational control.
He's got the gloves.
And it's fun to fly through Mr. Beckett's eye. You can come back out through the scary orangutan. That's all well and good. Let's do something a little more difficult. Here we have a whole bunch of disparate images. We can fly around them. So navigation is a fundamental issue. You have to be able to navigate in 3D. Much of what we want computers to help us with in the first place is inherently spatial. And the part that isn't spatial can often be spatialized to allow our wetware to make greater sense of it. Now, we can distribute this stuff in many different ways, so we can throw it out like that. Let's reset it. We can organize it this way.
Now, how cool, is this?
I mean, it's just manipulation as well. So if we don't like stuff or we're intensely curious,
I just love the fact that he does this separation. He just drags stuff out.
Them out like that. And then if it's time for analysis, we can pull back a little bit and ask for a different distribution.
God, that's so good.
That's ridiculous.
And he does this. He does a Boolean search.
Oh!
And fly around. So that's a different way to look at stuff. If you're of a more analytical nature, then you might want actually to look at this as a color histogram.
He separates it as a color histogram.
So now we've got the stuff color sorted. Angle maps into color. And now if we want to select stuff, 3D space, the idea that we're tracking hands in real space, becomes really important because we can reach in, not in 2D, not in fake 2D, but in actual 3D. Here are some selection planes. And we'll perform this Boolean operation because we really love yellow and tapirs on green grass.
Anyway, and it goes on. He actually does a video editing demonstration by the end of it where he actually is playing video and says, oh, we want to isolate just that character. And he isolates the character and just drags her to another screen and just starts pulling people off the screen and putting them onto another screen. And he said it's also not computer dependent. It's computer independent, which means he gets two other guys on who are using separate machines who come on and they have pointers and they basically start pointing stuff out and dragging it to other machines.
Wow.
So basically it's all networked and you can just move it from one machine. So that whole thing in Avatar you see where he grabs the image, puts it across to his tablet and walks it away.
Yeah.
That is reality,
you know? Yeah,
okay, it doesn't look as swish as that yet. And as he said, this is all cameras and it's all motion tracked and all this stuff. And they said, you know, will people have to have all this? He goes, no. He goes, what he envisions, and his quote, direct quote, 5 years. Hmm. He says, all of the sensors will be built into the bevel of the screen.
Yeah.
Dude,
totally.
We're at the stage now. And, it's a progress kind of a thing. It's not just going to happen overnight. But when we start moving to a generation of people that are used to touch, right? So we're moving into a generation where we are now getting devices that are all about touch. There is no mouse, no keyboard. Mm. I loved the fact that I had an argument with a customer who basically came up to me when he bought his iPad on his way out, and he went, can I connect a mouse and keyboard to it? And I just looked at him
why would you want to?
I'm like, there is no mouse interface. You don't need one.
The short answer is, in August, yes, you will be able to. But once again, why would you want to? Exactly. That's not the point.
You don't need a mouse. And the whole thing that is going to be funny is anyone that starts trying to use a mouse on these things is going to end up suffering because the whole point of it is we are at an interface that is trying to move completely away from buttons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. By the way, I did that test as well for you, Josh. Mm-hmm. Last week we talked about the fact that I was going to go have a look at the iPad because I am in love with the iPad. And yes, I've actually gone in several times and played with the iPad.
Oh, now. I know.
And I was at the Apple store in Bondi yesterday playing with it again. And it is beautiful. It's just staggering. But when we were playing with it, Josh was particularly impressed by Pages. Mm. And the idea of being able to just bring in graphics and stuff. And I said, does it do what the desktop version of Pages does, which is if you double tap on the image, can you move it around?
I
tested it. It works beautifully.
Yeah, no.
You can move it around inside the frame and zoom in and zoom out on it. It's fantastic. Looks beautiful. This is major geekgasm. Mm. This for me is like I had to get a towel after I saw this.
You know what I love more about it though, man, is when you look back now at these people that put this stuff in movies, you know, 10, 20 years ago, and people just laughed. Amazingly science fiction. It's ridiculous.
I actually remember watching Minority Report and I went, that is the future. I could see that being real.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, here it is. So it's fantastic stuff. And I am really, really, really keen. By the way, the interface is called G-Speak 3D. So if you want to go look it up online, there is a link to there's no link to the actual article, but the video is embedded on geekactually.com. There's a little bit of a commentary about it. But if you do a search for G-Speak 3D or his name, there's scads of research and notes and stuff like that on this, so you can find out more about it. It is, quite frankly, I think he's right. I think 5 years, we're going to start seeing this in the homes. We're already seeing it. Can anybody, for, you know, pop quiz, hot shot, anybody out there in the chat room name a product that is coming out that is very similar to this?
Natal,
absolutely. I mean, this is what we're heading for. This is the, everything is going touch interface. I'm still not sure about the whole concept of playing a shooter in Natal. You know,
but well, I can see. Oh, I was talking about this with someone the other day, and I can see it really working for RPGs like your Fallout or your Mass Effect, because it does feed off. Apparently, can look at the way your facial features and how you react to what's happening on the screen.
I'm very curious to see.
So I'm curious to see like how it goes with RPGs like Fallout and stuff, and if they could work in that way.
I had a long conversation with a friend of mine that has actually played with Move. They actually got
the Sony
on.
Move.
They got hands on with it, and they said that it was incredible. It's like, and
I've heard it's very fluid.
Yeah, I will quote him in saying that he says, "I could play a first person shooter using that." He said, "Is that accurate?"
Yeah, because the problem we have with the Wii was a start.
The Wii's quite gimmicky.
Well, the Wii
was
a start in the right direction, and when you're actually playing the game, it's fine because it's big, broad movements, right? Mm. But as soon as you have to start to select things on the screen and stuff, it's really wobbly and jiggly,
just
and
game
it's
like
not accurate.
WarioWare sometimes can be the biggest pain in the ass because you do something and it won't register on the screen because a couple of the movements for that game are actually quite, you know,
So I mean, but Wii was a stepping stone in the right direction. Yeah. You wouldn't have Move without Wii. So, and look, and you know, I think it's still a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And we've had a lot of fun playing the Wii Sports Resort and stuff like that. But I wouldn't even attempt to try and play something serious on the Wii. There's just not enough control. All right, I think this is the last tech story of the day. This is just a really quick one to say that iPads are here to stay. There's no doubt about it, because there was a restaurant in North Sydney here called Global Mundo Tapas. There you go. There's your plug. they're not paying me to plug them. I just found this article because I found it really amusing that they have abolished all menus in the restaurant, and they've replaced them all with iPads. And so they have their own custom iPad app.
God, that'd be so expensive to...
No shit.
Like, fucking hell. What if one of them breaks?
And my first result...
Well, no, I would imagine, knowing a company like that, they've probably got AppleCare on all of them.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. And my first answer was, how do they buy that many iPads?
Yeah.
Isn't there
the same way that everybody is. Like I said, man, we have had a company that, since the day that we first opened, they have been coming in religiously with five people every day and buying two at a time.
Wow.
So I mean, like, if you do that daily, because there's only a two a day limit.
Hmm.
Like, I've got to know these guys really well. They're fantastically nice people, and they are literally just buying them up.
I like it. Or Snake says, or the customers walk out with the menu. Yeah, are they chained down?
Yeah,
you know, it's like So I just thought that was kind of amusing, and I feel like just going to this restaurant just so I can play with the iPad. But I'm not serious.
I just imagine them though walking up and going, "Are you ready to order?" And you're like, "Just a sec,
I'm checking my mail."
You're gonna bang again.
You don't even have a Wi-Fi signal here. Shh.
All right. So, yes, I think that's it. I think that's it for tech. I think we can move into film and TV now. Let's move into film and TV and talk about Guillermo del Toro. Well, actually, no. Before we talk about Guillermo del Toro, let's look at a trailer. We've been very tech heavy here. Let's have a bit of fun. Let's sit back. The new Scott Pilgrim trailer just came out. Now, we showed the first teaser trailer for Scott Pilgrim when it first came out. This week, the full trailer came out. Unfortunately, I got to say, you're going to see this when you actually watch the trailer. My favorite moment in the teaser isn't in the trailer.
Oh, and he's like...
When he goes, "Hey, how's it going?"
Yeah. This is nice. Yeah.
And I thought, boy, that's a real loss that they got that out. But it shows a lot more of the fighting and stuff. I am really jazzed about this film. Here's Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Hey, what's up?
I'll leave you alone forever now.
You know this one girl with hair like this?
Yes, that's Ramona Flowers.
She's out of your league.
You know her? Tell me now.
She just moved here. Got a job at Amazon.
I have to order something really cool.
Scott, are you waiting for the package you just ordered?
Maybe.
Scott Pilgrim?
Hi, I was thinking about asking you out, but then I realized how stupid that would be.
That's okay. You just need to sign for this, all right?
So do you want to go out sometime?
If I say yes, will you sign for your damn package?
So yeah, 8 o'clock? Come to this Battle of the Bands thing.
You have a band?
Yeah, we're terrible.
One, two, three, four! Mr. Pilgrim!
I'm Ramona's first evil ex-boyfriend.
What?
Wait, we're fighting over Ramona?
Didn't you get my email explaining the situation?
I skimmed it.
Mm-mm.
What was that all about?
If we're gonna date, you may have to defeat my seven evil exes.
So what you're saying is we are dating?
I guess.
Does that mean we can make out?
Sure.
Scott Pilgrim!
Prepare to feel the wrath of the League of Evil Exes.
Ramona dated twins.
At the same time?
If you want something bad, you have to fight for it. Step up your game, Scott.
Combo!
Break out the L word.
Lesbian?
The other L word.
Lesbians?
What are you doing?
Getting a life.
You want to fight me for her? Why on earth would you want to do that?
Because I'm in love with her.
Scott Pilgrim versus the world.
Maybe next time we don't date the girl with 11 evil ex-boyfriends.
Seven.
Oh, that's not that bad.
Is going to kick so much ass, it's not even funny.
The funny thing about it is, all I can look at it is that I think that Edgar Wright might have actually made the first successful video game movie, and it's not even based on a video game.
Yeah, exactly. I am so looking forward to that film. It hurts.
It's fantastic. Now, I just want to apologize for those who are watching the live feed. It's been saying pre-show at the bottom of the screen for all this time because we reset the board in the middle of the show and came back up again. Hadn't noticed. Sorry about that. So it's off now. All right. No, that looks absolutely phenomenal. I love the look of the flaming swords. I think the flaming swords just look brilliant. And as I said, I think...
I love how the kabow and everything comes up. It's great.
Is, what are you doing? Getting a life.
The comic really, really well.
Look, it looks fantastic. I can't wait to see it. It looks outrageous fun. And I don't think it's anything you can take too seriously, but it's just going to be insane.
We don't forget, especially at this show, we don't forget that sometimes you go to a film and you don't need to take it seriously.
Absolutely.
And sometimes fun films are just fun.
That's right. Yeah. Look, this is what I said when we reviewed Sherlock Holmes. I sat down in the cinema for Sherlock Holmes. I looked at Maren and I basically said, all this movie has to do at this point is entertain me.
Exactly.
That's all I'm looking for, you know? And it did. It entertained me. That's all I was looking for, you know? Some films... don't need to. Nightmare on Elm Street, which we're going to review later. I wanted that to entertain me.
No.
I wasn't looking for Shakespeare here.
No,
you know?
Yeah,
we'll come back to that, though. All right, Guillermo del Toro. 2 years of pre-production. He's moved his entire family to New Zealand. Apparently, according to the last stats I read, all the monsters are designed, all the sets are designed, all the props are designed, everything is ready to go. They were ready to start filming. The script still needs one last polish, which he is working on with Fran and Peter Jackson. And he's now reached a point this week where he basically said, I regret to say that the delay is because of MGM's financial problems. We have no set start date at this point. I have to withdraw. And he has now withdrawn, and he is no longer directing The Hobbit, which has left a huge hole now, basically, in the production of The Hobbit.
A huge hole in
my heart. That too. And we're now sitting at a point where we don't know what is going to happen. Now, I've got a quote. I've got the quotes on the website just very briefly, though. He says, in his statement, he said, in light of ongoing delays and the setting of a start date for filming The Hobbit, I am faced with the hardest decision of my life. After nearly 2 years of living, breathing, and designing a world as rich as Tolkien's Middle Earth, I must, with great regret, take leave from helming these wonderful pictures. I remain grateful to Peter, Fran, and Philippa Boyens, New Line, and Warner Brothers, and to all my crew in New Zealand. I've been privileged to work in one of the greatest countries on earth with some of the best people ever in our craft, and my life will be forever changed. And he goes on from there. He's very, very gracious, and he says that he is going to continue helping finishing the rewrites, but he can no longer direct the film. He has other commitments he has to move on to. He has other films that he's supposed to be directing. So the question is, we now have a hole. Now, my first thought on this was, does this mean that we could probably talk Peter Jackson into maybe coming back and directing it? Now, Peter Jackson has come out on record and said In another quote, which is also on the site, he basically came out and said that if that's what it took to protect the investment, he would direct it. But his publicist has basically now come out and said he probably can't. He's got too many contracts already in the works. He's got Tintin already that he's working on at the moment. There's probably no chance that he can direct it. So we're really left in a real hole of a situation at the moment. One observation on the whole comment from Peter Jackson was, do we really want him to direct it if he's only doing it to protect an investment? Exactly. That doesn't show love for the project. That just shows...
Yeah. I don't think there's a lack of love, though. From him himself, he always has been a huge fan of everything related to this. I don't think it would be so much a matter of that. What I think I would like to see, and fans everywhere all over the world will try and kill me for this, but what I would like to see is just this project to just take a back seat for a little while.
Let people do
the projects they need to, wait for a hole in someone's schedule, and put someone in at a time that they've got time to do this.
I kind of feel that way as well. I kind of feel like...
Del Toro was saying, look, I had all this other stuff lined up and I can't dump that for The Hobbit. I've got places to be and shit to do, pretty much. So, you know...
Well, the question is, though, if they delay...
Just let it sit for a while and then get someone who is passionate about it to go back to it and direct
it. My question is as well...
Otherwise, it's just going to be a mess. It'll be Wolverine all over again.
Absolutely. And if Del Toro could take a back seat for a year to go off and work on a couple other projects, could they hold it for him?
Yeah.
To let him come back to it, you know?
Maybe.
There is the issue, of course, of payroll. You've got a lot of people who have been hired who now have basically lost their jobs. Mm-hmm. If they put it on the back burner, at the moment they're still employed. But if they put it on the back burner, which is what happened to Mission Impossible 2, they halted production. Everybody had to go home. All these, you know, couple hundred technicians who thought they were working for the next 6 months to a year. Suddenly don't have jobs, you know? So there's a whole bunch of financial concerns. Warner Bros. Has already plowed a lot of money into this production, you know? They're not going to want a back burner this thing. So the question is, if they're going to push ahead, who? Who do we know who is working today who has the right cred to direct this? With the exception of, say, Sam Raimi, who's already doing a fantasy film. He's not going to come and do it because he was one of the names floated around at one point. But he's doing Warcraft at the moment, so he's not going to be coming to do it. So, I mean, the question is, who do we have? My first thought, but I don't think he'll do it somehow, would be Neil Blomkamp.
That's actually what sprung to mind as the one.
But he's already working on another science fiction film at the moment, so I don't think he'll come back to do that. I don't know. Chat room, you got any suggestions? Anybody out there you think could take on The Hobbit?
No.
No.
Like, I mean, no, only because in my eyes, the biggest problem that I have with someone kind of stepping into the shoes is that we're going to get a different world if we're not careful. I was okay with Guillermo del Toro because the two of them, in my eyes, have very similar ways of
thinking.
And
we've seen his take on fantasy as well. We know what
exactly.
But you can see the similarities, you know, even though they are very different. They both have a very strong love for fantasy and they both have a very similar disposition as to what that looks like on screen. So the
and
two
a love
of them,
for Tolkien as well.
Exactly. And,
like a
and
knowledge
both
and a
them,
love of Tolkien.
Exactly. And both of them have kind of had that, you can tell there's that, they've both had the kind of fantasy upbringing. They know, you know, sort of the way they like things. And I really expected them to feed nicely off each other. For like something nice on screen. I expected something different, maybe a little darker, because I mean, Del Toro is a bit that way. Yep. But it would still be all right. And I actually, in my mind, think The Hobbit is a bit darker than things.
Actually, I would disagree with you. I think The Hobbit's actually lighter because The Hobbit was actually made for a younger audience. So The Hobbit's actually a lighter film.
I don't know.
Lord of the Rings did
earlier.
Have its very, very dark moments. I think
it did.
Peter Jackson lightened it a lot.
Exactly.
Yeah. There were parts in that book that were quite scary.
Look, the only scene that I think in The Hobbit that is really dark, quite sinister, is the spiders and the wood elves. That whole sequence is that sequence is pretty dark. But
and that's what I expect would have gone.
What
dark.
I wanted though was we need somebody who can also handle scale because you've got the Battle of Five Armies. Is it Battle of Five Armies? Three armies? Seven armies? Five? Armies? The dwarves. When everybody goes to war at the end, there's that huge war at the end, which I think is described in The Hobbit in literally like two pages, where they basically say they fight. You know, but it is supposed to be this epic war.
Yeah.
And we need somebody who can handle dark fantasy, et cetera, but can also handle scale when they have to get a scale. Mm. So it's a really hard call. Just don't hire Michael Bay. That's all I ask. Oh.
Can we not utter his name in the same sentence?
Oh, no, we have to.
Anything related we to have Tolkien to, because we have
if he, gets picked up, I'm gonna have to hit you in the face, Dave. I'm sorry, but that will be because
it'll
of
be your
you.
Fault.
I have to say, by the way, I have a picture of Peter Jackson Del Toro at a happier time. There you go.
He's lost so much weight.
Yeah, he has, doesn't he? He's like a shadow of himself. Now, I have to say that I don't think Peter Jackson would ever hire Michael Bay to direct a film. They are polar opposites in style. But speaking of Michael Bay, I do happen to have a Michael Bay story here. Yay. It's actually not about Michael Bay. It's about the casting, the replacement for Megan Fox. Now, I'm going to turn the volume down a little bit, though, because the sound on this video clip gets really loud at places. Heidi Montag. Now, for those who don't know Heidi Montag,
last name.
She is a star of The Hills, the reality TV show The Hills. She's a complete bimbo. And Josh and I actually talked about her a couple weeks ago.
So she's the ultimate woman, really.
Well, yeah, but she's also kind of like a skinny. She's also kind of like a Frankenstein monster because she had like 17 plastic surgeries. She had her boobs done. She looks completely different now than she did 6 months ago. Even her mother has basically said, "You're a monster. Go away from me now." Heidi Montag's a very, very strange, disturbed girl, and stupid as a row of planks. I mean, she's just thick as a row of planks, right? Stupid. I'm mixing my metaphors here.
Blah, blah, anyway, blah, blah.
The point is that she, unsolicited, mind you, decided that she was going to submit an audition tape to Michael Bay for Transformers 3 because Megan Fox was no longer in it, and she decided that she would be perfect for this. And this is...
Oh, God.
Her audition tape. Oh, God. This is what she decided was a good idea.
Headphones are going on for this one.
Actually, she doesn't speak very much. Oh, really? She speaks just at the very beginning. But this is what Heidi Montag thought would get her the job, okay?
Okay, cool.
This is American Defense Enterprises. We're training Heidi Montag up for her Transporter 3 audition.
This is for you, Michael Bay.
Oh, no.
Ready.
Wow. Okay, so that was her audition.
Why was she firing a gun?
Well, she obviously felt that it was an action film, so she needed to be an action star. Little does she know that, of course, that the role that
she's... Has she seen the other films? Because the role that she's going to be playing
Slashfilm.com actually summed it up perfectly, where it said she would have actually been better off, like, you know, reading some dialogue, or better... just walking around in a bikini.
Yeah, or like on a bed in like some lingerie with some fluffy pillows. That would be perfect.
Michael Bay hires with his penis. He doesn't
want to. Yeah, exactly.
It's the guys who run around shooting, not the girls, you know? Anyway, so that was her. And the reason why we bring it up, that's actually last week's news, and I didn't play it in last week's show because I thought it was just really stupid and why the hell is she doing this? However, news has surfaced this week that Ben Kingsley has also decided that he wants to audition for the Megan Fox role.
Okay.
And he decided to do his own audition tape. So this Ben Kingsley sent this in, right? So
this is awesome. Nice. Michael Bay, I've come all the way from England and I'm a little nervous. And I want to audition for your next film. And I brought my own tea. And could somebody take my tea? Okay, let's go. Somebody say action.
Action.
So that was Ben Kingsley.
You know what? I admire the man because I've never seen the humor side of that man.
Knew he had a sense of humor.
I have a new love for him.
That was, of course, from the Lopez show, and he basically sent it all up, and it deserved to be sent up. And as we know now, Heidi Montag did not get the role. The lingerie model thing got the role.
Yeah.
So
yeah, well, because like obviously
she walked around with no clothes on.
That's right. Lingerie, so you know, there we go.
All right, so that's the Michael Bay news. Now,
Cyrus is asking if she can be in the movie.
Cyrus, put yourself, get your, I mean, Heidi's is obviously with an iPhone too, because it's that weird ratio of holding it up. So just get yourself an iPhone, go out to a shooting range, shoot it, we'll play it on the show too.
Shoot in a bikini. Then shoot in a bikini. You definitely get a
there
roll.
You go. I think that was the mistake that Heidi Montag did. I mean, the girl is not averse to being semi-naked. That's what she does half the time. So anyway. All right. So let's move on and talk a little bit about Marvel. Marvel Comics, Marvel Productions, I should say, seems to really have, like, it's got a leak on the side of it bigger than the oil spill in the Gulf. I mean, you know, this is a studio that for so long kept things nice and tightly under wraps.
I think they're leaking on purpose.
I had that thought. And I think it all started because, if you remember going back, when Iron Man was shown at, the first trailer for Iron Man was shown at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
And it went berserk. And somebody videotaped it off the screen and put it onto YouTube. And it had more hits than anything else in the world. And everybody went berserk for this trailer, to the point where even The Onion made a satire based on that trailer. Yeah. Because saying, you know, people are complaining that they're making a movie based on this trailer. And, I mean, it was just went viral, right? I'm wondering if Marvel basically said, that's a great way of marketing. Let's see if we can milk that
a little bit
further.
Yeah, I think...
Because this week,
stuff is actually a really good way to get to keep people interested.
Yeah,
to,
absolutely.
You know, and we make them think that it's something really exclusive when it's actually they've just put it out on purpose.
That's right, and we've actually, according to Ain't It Cool News, this image, which is Captain America's costume, has been confirmed as legit. They didn't say how they confirmed it, but they did confirm that it is legit. And there's actually a series of, I think, four or five of these pictures of him in various poses. Their computer renders using Chris Evans's face to show what the costume for Captain America is going to be like. And I kind of dig the costume. I miss the wings, though. I want wings on the cowl.
Yeah, wings would be really cool. Like, but not even wings. Like,
just on the side, something.
Painted on the side would be like a really funky
thing. Yeah, something. I just feel like
But I love what they've done with the armor. The armor looks fantastic.
Yeah, and I love the fact that he doesn't have the red stripes. It's been put on the belt.
It's kind of a camp costume, and he's a camp character, but they've done it really
good. Yeah, I think they've done really good with it. So this was the first leak. The Captain America stuff came out, and everybody went fucking apeshit over this. All right, people going, oh, it's Captain America. I mean, we had more hits on our website the day we put these up than I think we've had since we started. Then, a few days later, these pictures leaked out, which is Thor's costume.
Yeah.
Now, we've already seen one official photo of Thor, only like the upper torso part. Now we look at this. Yes, it matches the photo that we saw, so therefore we can pretty much guarantee that this is real, and it's in exactly the same style as the Captain America pictures, so I think we can pretty much guarantee that they're all legitimate. And that rocks too, although I still want to see his helmet. We still haven't seen his helmet yet, but I think, you know, that rocks as well, and he looks pretty damn good. And, you know, all I can say is, boy, Marvel, if you're leaking this stuff on purpose, it's clever, but don't oversaturate to the point where...
I don't think we'll be seeing anything else for a while,
I think we'll be seeing a teaser for Thor soon, I think.
We'll see a teaser, and then that's it, and then we won't get any images or anything for a while.
But,
they'll release something and be like, eh.
What's really interesting is they don't have to do anything now, because fans have already latched onto it all.
You're going berserk.
And I have this picture here. This is a fan-made piece of art that surfaced last night, where somebody has taken photos from the Hulk and Iron Man, and the two concept pictures, basically color-graded them so they all kind of match, and has fan-made the first poster for the Avengers, which actually works really well. And we're starting to see more and more of this sort of stuff turning up now. There's another one of these.
I love board nerds. They're just a wealth of
I know, aren't they fantastic? There's another one of these that also has Black Widow on the ground, but it's the pose from Iron Man, so it's the photo taken straight from Iron Man and stuff like that. So, and the other piece of news, which I don't have, we didn't actually put it down as an official story, but apparently Jeremy Renner is in final talks at this point. Now, Jeremy Renner was in Hurt Locker. He's in final talks at the moment to play Hawkeye in The Avengers.
I'm so okay with that.
How cool is that?
So, The Avengers is shaping up really nicely since Joss got signed on board, and things are moving along at a swift pace.
Very exciting.
All right, so that's our Marvel news. We were really comic book heavy last week, so we're not going to go too comic book heavy this week. I just thought we'd talk about those. Let's talk about Rampage Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
Next week, we are going to be seeing the
Rampage motherfucking Jackson.
Rampage motherfucking Jackson. Next week, we'll be seeing the A-Team, and we'll be able to tell you firsthand what he's like. But he came out with a quote this week that basically said that he thought acting was kind of gay. And his exact quote was, you got all these people combing your hair and putting a coat over your shoulders. Hold on, he doesn't really have that much hair. But anyway, combing your hair and putting a coat over your shoulders when you're cold. I don't want a coat over my shoulders. I'm a tough-ass motherfucker. All right? And all I could think is, so you think movie acting is kind of gay. Okay, so I don't know. I think, you know, pot kettle black. What I've got on screen for the audio listeners is a picture from his UFC fighting, which is him all bare-chested and sweaty, nose-to-nose
like
with another.
They are virtually kissing.
They are almost kissing another semi-naked man. And they are just touching all their parts together. And all I can think is, really? There is nothing more. There's nothing more gay than that picture. So, Rampage. You know what? I'm sure they paid you a lot of money. Don't go biting the hand that feeds you. You know.
Yeah.
And besides, I don't think you're going to act again after this anyway. So, I think this is probably his one-off shot.
However, Dave did not actually use that as a major way of describing what was wrong with this film when he was giving me his review. So,
what, Rampage?
Yeah.
Really?
He actually did. That was not one.
No,
of
but
the
he
points.
Wouldn't because he hates. What's his name?
Yes, yeah. But apparently I can completely agree with him on why I'm going to hate this guy in this movie.
Really?
Yeah.
He hates the actor who plays Face. What's his goddamn name again?
He actually doesn't hate that guy because he's been in other things.
He hates him.
He told
me the other day he hates him.
Yeah, but no, I'm going to hate him anyway because I hate pretty boys that play up like 90% of the role on screen, like McConaughey style. Kind of
yeah, McConaughey
players.
Is cool.
No, but McConaughey has a level of douche that he's aware of. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's well aware. It's like, you know I'm shit, but
he's
people
accepting
keep...
the douche.
In fact, wasn't that an actual quote from him? I know I'm shit, but people keep paying me to be in movies. And I'm like sitting there going, McConaughey knows
yeah.
that he is a
Tell
douchebag.
Tell how it is.
Yeah. Exactly.
Tell
Whereas this guy, I don't see it. I don't.
Yeah. Now, what's the actor's name? Can somebody help me out here? I've gone blank. Chat room. The star of The Hangover, and he was also in Wedding Crashers. My mind has gone blank.
It's coming.
Keep going.
Anyway, all right. So
Bradley Cooper.
That's him. Thank you very much, Bradley Cooper. I actually don't mind Bradley Cooper that much. Davis hates him, but I don't mind him so much. Mm. Anyway,
I like The Hangover. So.
I love The Hangover.
I have nothing wrong with The Hangover. That's what that movie was aimed to do, make me laugh, and I laughed, so...
Well, speaking of laughing, it's funny you bring that up, because the next trailer we're going to show is supposed to be a comedy. Now, all I can say about... This is the first trailer... I'm assuming kind of teaserish, although it shows a lot of material, for Gulliver's Travels. Now we heard.
Have we already done this trailer on the show?
No.
I must have seen it somewhere.
No, Gulliver's Travels is only. This trailer only came out this week.
Oh, I'm seeing some.
Talked about Gulliver's Travels because this was the film. Emily Blunt was supposed to play Black Widow in Iron Man 2. And Fox pulled an option on her because they have contracts. And they pulled an option and removed her from Iron Man 2 because they wanted her to be in Gulliver's Travels. So she lost out on Iron Man 2. And this is the film that she got for not doing Iron Man 2. And all I could think is, really? And of course, my first thought was, oh, they're going to do a good classical Gulliver's Travels. No. What they did do was a Jack Black vehicle. And here's Gulliver's Travels.
Oh, give me your press badge. No way, you're not my dad. Then I shall take it by force.
Oh, he's my brother.
Then you shouldn't have made out with him.
What do you hope to get out of being in the mailroom?
I hope to get out of being in the mailroom.
You're hired.
How long have you had this crush on the travel editor?
On Darcy? No way, dude.
How's your day going?
Really good. Just really, really good.
Have a good one.
You too.
Oh, wait. I forgot something.
Yeah, me too.
Gulliver, you're not my boss anymore.
It's impossible. You just got here.
I'm your boss now. It's over for you. Never really gonna get any bigger than this.
You think I don't have plans? I got big plans. I got a writing sample I've been working on. It's dynamite.
I had no idea you wrote. I think I have the perfect fluff piece to start you off with. There's a guy who claims he has the secret to the Bermuda Triangle. So what do you say?
We'll see you in 3 weeks with a story that's gonna blow your mind.
You just follow that dot, and you'll find yourself in a triangle.
Done.
Okay. Where's the clutch?
Thank you.
wanted a bracelet. Not a great big hairy beast.
What?
Pound it with your fist.
Woo-hoo! Don't shave up my sideburns. I need those mutton chops.
What was I just watching?
Well,
crap.
I'm really confused.
I don't...
What's that movie meant to be about?
It's Jack Black, because Black is the new big. No, what did it say at the end?
I don't know.
You go Black, you never go back. I don't know.
It's just one of the... I sat there watching it going, what a mess.
I think
the biggest mess for me is, like, is where it's
casting
Jack
Black. I didn't know where it wanted to
no.
go.
It was like half of the trailer was just, like, leading up to what is Gulliver's Travels. I mean, we didn't need that first bit.
That's almost like Fox didn't know how to market it, and they're kind of going, well, we need to explain why it's modern day to start with and why Jack Black is there, and we need to explain that he's a loser. Jack Black's already a loser.
Yeah.
We know that, you know?
We know this.
It's like, wow. Just I sat there watching going, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I don't know how to take that kind of information.
And she lost out Iron Man 2 for, in the trailer, what, one line?
Yeah,
it's like, and when I first started watching the trailer and I saw Amanda Peet in the role, I went, that's not Emily, but did she lose this as well? You know, it's like, what the hell? It's like, no, really, really, really awful. And worst movie remake ever, says Northy. Yes, Snake, it said fucking 3D Rage, yes. It's going to be 3D. I don't know if it's being shot in 3D or whether it's up-converted. I'm hoping it's shot in 3D.
Yeah, it looks kind of shot-ish.
I think it may have been shot. I think it was planned.
I missed that. Wow, yeah, no, that's...
I think it was planned. I am over, by the way, state it one more time. We've said it before. If a film is converted, I'm not seeing it in 3D. Mm.
I think there's going to be a strong possibility I won't be watching that film anyway.
Yeah.
There's a very strong possibility we may be skipping that one. Or maybe it may be a little geek. Maybe a little geek, because he'll probably want to see it and may go on a little geek show. But I don't know if we'll be doing it on the main show. But one film that I am interested in having a look at, though, as I've oft said, I'm not big on remakes, but every now and again, remakes work. Mm. The Fly, The Thing, you know, there are remakes that actually surpass the original. So we can't just say, oh, it's a remake, hate it.
Mm.
And there are a couple of films where I look at it and go, boy, you could really use a remake. One of those films is Logan's Run. And we talked about Logan's Run last week and the fact that it's picked up a possibility of a new director. Well, Joel Silver has now actually come out. This is Joel Silver here, the uber producer. He came out on an interview.
It's a head. It's a big head.
It is a big head. He's a big guy. I've met Joel Silver. He's a big guy. And he's actually come out basically saying that he is very keen to get Logan's Run off the ground. Yeah. He's really pushing ahead with this. He feels it's a film that really needs to be made. But he was asked about the whole 3D thing, and he said that, yes, they are planning Logan's Run to be in 3D, but conceived and shot in 3D.
In 3D,
well, that's good.
Yeah.
He said that...
thank Christ for that.
Absolutely. His exact quote is, I'd like to make Logan's Run in 3D. It's a movie I've always been intrigued with, excited by. We're writing a script now, and that should be a big 3D movie, and it should be devised and shot in 3D. I think it can be put together. I think if we can put it together, then it would be. So he's really working on trying to get this off the ground. I'm really looking forward to a remake of Logan's Run, because I think in particular today, it actually has a lot of relevance. In this, especially in our culture at the moment, where everything is getting younger and younger and younger, and we seem to not want to hire anybody over the age of 20, the idea of a show or a story where if you reach 21, you get killed, kind of really does have momentum in this society.
Totally.
Now we're going to finish off. We're going to finish off tech news and go into our film review with one last trailer. This is probably the oddest thing I have seen in a long, long time, and I came across it and went, "Oh wow, I want to see this."
What is Jackboots?
That's what we're just about to talk about. Twitch.com basically posted this up because it's an independent film. Nobody has basically been posting anywhere, so Twitch took it upon themselves to say, we are going to promote this. Mm. It's a British film comedy. It's kind of, in a way, it's not really the same, but it's kind of, in a way, the UK's answer to Team America World Police. And it's a World War II epic. Well, let's just let the trailer speak for itself.
Nice.
Here is Jack Boots on Whitehall.
man's last hope.
Kill them all!
Against a full-scale Nazi invasion.
To another one, the German army is your friend.
It's the invasion.
Are you ready for a war? Now who is with me?
Let's go back to the pub.
A story this big had to be scaled down.
Crash and burn, just like my second marriage. The army won't be able to hold out for long. We need to get to London.
Featuring the voice talents of Ewan McGregor.
We're here to rescue Mr. Churchill.
Timothy Spall.
Take hot lead, Fritz.
Rosamund Pike.
Wow, Chris, when did you get so tough? I like it.
Oh, she looks dirty.
Tom Wilkinson.
Joyous joy.
It looks like we have won.
Dominic West.
Saddle up.
And Alan Cumming.
Ta-da! It's me. Lovely fabric, isn't it? I love you, Hans.
Now that's just nonsense.
Incoming! Larry!
Open the bombay!
You will attack immediately!
We are hurt!
Can't get it, you little p***!
Never! Enough yield of human conflict for so much. Bugger up, I show you.
Now, our freedom rests in their tiny plastic hands. Jackboots on Whitehall.
Whoa, that was intense.
That's what all the gals say.
Coming soon.
Now, is that what? One of the strangest things you've
seen?
It's one of the strangest things I have come across in a while. Although, I have to say, I love the line. The fate of the world lies in their tiny plastic hands. Yes, for the audio listeners, it is a puppet show done with action figures, and it is just out of its tree. Now, whether...
How did they get these people to do this film?
Ewan McGregor?
Dave, you're causing brain aids at the moment. You really are.
Look, all I can think is it's got quite an amazing list of voice talent that is attached to it. It is very, very, very odd. And it's either going to crash and burn completely, or it could be the next cult thing to come out of the world. It is very, very odd. And
I just can't.
No, it doesn't have that. Well, we don't know yet because this is the first trailer. We didn't know about the songs in World Police either. Until
I just can't see anyone other than Matt Stone and Trey Parker doing that well.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with that.
But they just have Matt Stone and Trey Parker just have that cheeky and also, taking the piss out of themselves while taking the piss out of everyone else at the same time.
Like, yeah, there is that.
So and also the other reason that thing is they were well aware they were using puppets and they used that to their advantage.
Exactly.
Like made that kind of part of the thing, whereas that really doesn't seem to be doing that. But again, I mean, it may be the worst lines from the entire film in the trailer, and maybe it will get
be a classic hit.
Maybe
you never know. It has cult written all over it at this point. So
we'll see.
We shall see. All right. So let's move. Whoa, hello. Beep.
Hello.
Let's move into
our. At least once a show. At least once a show. Then.
At least once a show. Gotta have the boop at least once a show. All right. Let's move into our.
Do we have to?
Yeah, we do.
Do we have to?
We're here for a reason, and the reason is. A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Should we say A Nightmare in the Cinemas? Am I right? Am I right, guys?
can we kill her?
Can
Mike,
we kill
please?
This?
All right, so let's do a quick rundown here. We'll say A Nightmare on Elm Street, directed by Samuel Bayer. If you've never heard of him, probably because he's never directed anything else, he is a commercial director. The film was written by Wesley Strick and Eric Heisserer. Based on characters created by Wes Craven. We'll say loosely based on characters created by Wes Craven. The film stars Jackie Earle Haley and a whole bunch of people you've never heard of before. Let's just run through them really quickly. They're all fodder anyway. Kyle Gallner, Rooney Mara, Katie Cassidy, Thomas Decker, Kellan Lutz. And of course, Clancy Brown, who a lot of people remember as the Kurgan in Highlander. He's Mr. Krabs in SpongeBob. You also mentioned one as well.
The prison guard from Shawshank.
He was also
his best role.
Deadly Pursuit, which I really enjoyed. Clancy Brown I really like, and he's completely wasted in this. And all I've summed up with is, I've just said, a Platinum Dunes remake of the classic 1984 Wes Craven film of the same name. The kids on Elm Street start having severe nightmares about a maniac with blades on his fingers and a burned-up face. If you don't know what the plot of A Nightmare on Elm Street is by now, where have you been living?
Why are you going to watch this film?
Yeah.
Is this like the only reason you would bother?
Yeah, why are you going to watch this film when there is already a good film, you know, anyway, but we'll get back to that. One by one, they start being killed by the demonic demon dream figure, and when you die in his world, you die in the real world. It's up to Nancy and Kyle to find out who the mysterious killer is and why he wants them all dead before it is too late, and they become the next victims. And before we go into do this review, I will play the trailer for Nightmare on Elm Street just to remind people what the hell we're talking about here, and be prepared for rage when we come back.
You come back and Josh.
Hello? Anyone here? Hello?
If you keep falling asleep, they're gonna kick you out of here.
Sorry. I had another nightmare last night. I can't tell what's real anymore. Is there anybody else out there that this is happening to?
Every time that I dream, there's always this man.
That's his mark, isn't it? Freddy.
Oh my God, you've seen him too. Who are you?
Remember me.
It's me, it's you, it's Dean, it's Jesse, Chris.
It's in all of our heads, Nancy. We gotta stop this.
How?
Don't fall asleep.
I haven't slept in 3 days.
We're running out of time.
At the 70-hour mark, the insomniac will begin to experience micro-naps. It means you're dreaming, but you don't know it. Even if you're awake.
No, just me.
What is he gonna stop? What does he want from us?
Why are you screaming? I haven't even caught you yet.
I don't know.
I'm gonna give you a little something that'll put you right to sleep.
No.
This might sting a bit.
I haven't even cut you yet.
Oh dear. All right. I'm gonna go right out the front here and just say, fucking don't go see this movie.
Please don't waste your money. Definitely don't see it at Grady Union because the tickets were like $17 or $19 each or something. Like, that's just a rip-off. Okay, great, I get a cushy seat. Big fucking deal. Doesn't make
the
movie any
better. I'm going to say the seats aren't any better. The ones in the main two rooms, one and two, are good.
The VMAX.
Everything else is not that great.
Yeah, look, the film is a lackluster remake. It is the Platinum Dunes boys doing. I actually, when we first showed the very first trailer going way back a couple of months ago, I said, wow, Platinum Dunes might have actually started to get something right because it was not a bad-looking teaser. Nah. Then the second trailer came out and you kind of went, not as good. And then, of course, the film just lives up to the fact that, as Josh said when we saw the film, the Platinum Dunes logo came up at the beginning. Josh said, avert your eyes, avert your eyes.
Save the children.
Look, I have to say, look, straight out, I think the worst thing about it is that the concept, when you actually listen to the trailer, actually does sell an interesting picture to me. The concept of micro-naps was something that I was interested in.
Yeah.
I didn't mind them going in that direction with it. And the what we got was just from start to finish an abortion. And, like, I mean, I raged for a good solid hour after this.
No, I want to paint this picture. Josh comes to my place for Dave to pick us up, and he is in a foul mood, like a foul mood. Those of you who know Josh know that when Josh is in a foul mood, it's like there is literally a cloud, a visible cloud on top of him raining and electrocuting him. Like, he was in the shittest of shit moods. I'm like, hey, buddy, how are you going? And you're like, don't fucking talk to me. I just sat on my couch and sulked. Dave comes to pick us up.
You make me seem like such a positive.
He gets something to eat, and you know, I thought maybe that'd make him feel better, but it didn't.
No, because he had problems at the restaurant too.
Yeah, I did not have that.
This film, Josh was in such a funk, and then after the film, even during the film, I could hear him huffing and puffing.
Really, do you want to give your own review for this instead of talking about my experience of this film?
As soon as the lights come up, like a split second before the lights come up, Josh is up of his seat and he's fucking out of there like a rocket.
His exact line, I believe, was, "We don't really have to stay for the credits on this one, do we?"
He was so cranky, and he gets up and he just fucks off and he doesn't stop till he's out of the cinema, down the bottom of the escalators, out in the foyer. Like, he was just... He rage quit.
Yeah,
at the
well,
end
look.
Of that
let me explain. Let me explain. Let me explain.
Please explain to us, Josh.
But rightly so, I think it was very justified. Yeah. But the fact that he was in a foul mood beforehand really didn't help.
It didn't help.
No, it didn't. It didn't help. But let me.
This film didn't have a chance.
As people will remember from our review of the Final Destination film. I have an incredible love for horror films, and like I do not see them, and I've told Dave this before, I do not see them as some sort of Shakespearean cinema experience.
They're a thing of their own. There's no point.
Well, again, it doesn't necessarily have to. Gorno is a genre of its own, and look, as much as I may not like a lot of it, there are films that do work. I would still class in a lot of ways something like The Descent, because a lot of that film is hard to watch gore. Like, there is a lot of suspense mixed in amongst it as well. Eyeballs scene, hello?
No. Yeah, but there's a popping eyeball scene in Blade Runner too. Yeah, it doesn't necessarily make it
gore. Yeah, no, but you don't... Anyway, look, this is off topic. Let me finish. And horror movies are something that I don't really like people playing with the formula, because people don't seem to get it. And Platinum Dunes is the greatest defender of this. And I've given them their three strikes, and this is it. Unless I hear a positive review, this will be the last one I see.
Unless I hear several positive reviews.
Oh, no. When I mean that, I mean as in a Shining, as in like across the board kind of a situation, because I'm done with them. I've tried my best with these guys. I've let them touch things that I hold dear to me, and I have let them try their own.
Sorry, do you say you let Platinum Dunes touch things that are dear to you?
Yeah, I do mean these films. Let's stay on topic again. Now,
Dave and I are just giggling uncontrollably at that.
These films are a beast to their own, and anyone that knows the original know that they are a little camp if you watch them now.
But they're fantastic.
It's very hard to show somebody that isn't into horror nowadays a film like this. Like, an ex-girlfriend of mine is not into horror and doesn't like scary things, and I sat them down and showed them the first Jason film, and she actually spent most of the time laughing and giggling in the film, which I found incredibly insulting.
Really? It's funny?
But at the same time, it's about the suspense, and we've always known that. And even in the Freddy films, it was about the dreamlike states that they would go into. It was about the odd sort of dream experiences, and right the way through the series, even when they got incredibly comical, which they did, one thing that they all held very true to themselves was the concept of the scariness and the horror of it coming out in these really disturbing dreams. Whether it would be
the fluidity from the dreamscape to reality.
Exactly.
You can't actually tell when they're in a dream and when they're in reality. Whereas in this, it was like dream reality, and it's just like,
well, this was the Michael
for slapping
Bay
me across the face with it.
This was the Michael Bay feeling in me, was just this really horrible kind of experience that we were getting. Where the dreams just seem to hit with such impact. They could never be a dream.
Yeah.
They would be sitting there in class. One of my most hated scenes in the film is where the girl is sitting in class, and we are all well aware that she has fallen asleep in her chair. And then all of a sudden, it's like she sneezes, and the whole room disappears into ash. And I'm just sitting there going,
that's not how dreams
That is
work.
Not how a dream works. No one has spent any time learning anything about
also,
it.
Also, I mean, there is
not how microsleep
No, there's
work
also
either.
A fundamental issue with the whole microsleep thing that they're doing. And this was a new thing that they were trying for this film because they obviously felt that the first films weren't fast enough or something, so this way they could like throw a lot more into it. Mm. Problem is, micro napping doesn't necessarily mean you're dreaming, you know. And and if you're not entering that REM sleep state, you're not hitting that Freddy Krueger time, you
know.
Like, so
the interesting thing is, the closest they got in some of the scenes of this film were bits like where he turns around and has like a flash dream of her being cut or something like that. Like that's the kind of hallucination you would have if you were incredibly tired and trying to force yourself to stay awake. Yeah. Like it's flashes and stuff like that. You fall in and out of sleep, as opposed to these really odd experiences where it would kind of become a dream and then not. But then sometimes they would mess that up too, where, as you said in one of the scenes, she falls into a moment of sleep and then falls out, but the lighting's still exactly the same.
So yeah, like, their continuity on it just didn't work sometimes. I mean, they're trying to be too clever for their own good.
Yeah.
But we're now falling a little bit, you know, far out of like where we should start. The storyline itself was really, really bad as well.
Well, look, in the original film, one of the things about the original film that worked really well was it had that central protagonist. You had the central character,
Nancy. And
it was Nancy.
Clear who Nancy
yeah.
was and
That's
what
right.
she
and,
needed to
And
do.
It was her journey, and then it was that whole idea that she learned to fight back, you know? She learned about what he was. She learned how to deal with him, how to bring him out. She did all of this stuff. And her friends are being killed around her and all this sort of stuff. But Nancy was our central protagonist.
Yeah.
It wasn't until halfway through this film did we even figure out who Nancy was.
Yeah.
And then they
like,
obviously
is the blonde chick the protagonist, is the brunette the protagonist.
That's right. And then once we did know who Nancy was, she wasn't strong enough to carry it on her own, so we had to have it with her with a guy. That's right. So we ended up having to have two protagonists because Nancy was boring as batshit, and
she needed a man to carry her through.
Damn straight. It seemed to be the way that it was.
Of course.
I felt like they'd lost their central core of the story.
But not only that, the story also falters incredibly in the fact that they've changed one of the main elements of the story, which is the fact that in the original one, he was a child killer. And me and Dave spoke.
Yeah, let's just actually just say right off the bat that we're going to go into spoilers we're talking about this, because it's too hard to talk about the differences without talking about spoilers.
There is no love for this film.
Just before we go into spoilers, I think I can speak for all of us when I say this is not recommended viewing.
I can go much further than that. I would
avoid
say
it,
if
like
someone
avoid
gives you a copy for Christmas or birthday, set it on fire. And
then
actually,
throw it in their face.
And throw
with
it
melting
at
plastic,
them.
Yes.
Because, this film is an actual, it is completely...
And in fact, I'll go so far as to say...
to the original.
Well, I'll actually go so far as to say, because I love the original Nightmare on Elm Street so much, because I think the original Nightmare is a very clever film. I actually will go so far as to say I think their remake of Friday the 13th was actually a better film. And I thought that was a terrible film. Mm. But I thought that was a better film than this was. Mm. Because this one... Friday the 13th is easy. Friday the 13th is a serial killer chasing down a bunch of teenagers and kills them.
Yeah.
This one... is held closer to our hearts. I mean, the Nightmare on Elm Street films are clever, and the Platinum Dunes guys didn't get it.
Well, that's what I find so disturbing. It's like you're giving these people an idea, and they're just missing every mark.
Yeah.
Like, as we were saying, the whole thing that made the first one interesting was the effects on the lives of the people around after Freddy.
Yeah.
Like, Freddy was so much deeper.
That's right. So let's just, now that we've opened the spoilers, what you were about to say just before that was, in the original Nightmare on Elm Street, spoilers for both, okay? Yeah. If you haven't seen the original by now, for God's sake.
I mean,
come on,
where have you been?
All right, so in the original Nightmare on Elm Street, he is a child killer, which explains the claws, because in the opening scene of the film, you actually see him making his claws. He goes out and kills children. The townsfolk get together, like a lynch mob, and basically burn him and kill him to protect their children.
Now, the reason for that, let's stay there, is the reason for the mob justice on that situation is it doesn't matter if you lock this person up. He has made the decision to kill children.
That's right.
And he will continue to. New film,
in the new film, it's a different story. In the new film, he's now a pedophile, of course.
Alleged
pedophile, whatever.
And then at the end, it's like, oh, he was.
The big reveal. But anyway, the point is that he's a pedophile because, of course, that is the hot topic at the moment in our society. And the townsfolk basically mob killed him because he was diddling their children.
But they didn't know.
But they didn't have proof of this. They just decided that that's what you had to do.
Yep.
And so they burnt him up and killed him. And of course, now he's coming back. And this is where it gets muddy, because in the original, Freddy is killing the kids of the people who killed him.
Yeah.
And that's how he's getting back at the people who killed him. Mm. In the new one, he's killing the kids because they told on him.
Yeah. He wants to kill us because it's not quite as strong.
It's not quite as strong a motivation, you know? It doesn't quite have the same oomph to it.
Well, I think more importantly for me, it makes it really muddy the parents, because it's like, no matter if he did or didn't, like, this man needs to be locked away in a mental asylum.
That's right.
And put away from society. Mm. He is not trying to kill people. Or is he? Because there's claws in his room.
Well, that's right. That's one of the muddy things in this film is when they finally find his lair, they find the claws. And you go, if he's just a pedophile, why does he have claws?
Wasn't he cutting the girls, though? Like, okay.
There was one point where she had some welts on her back.
She had some scratches on her back.
It was scratches, but that's not the big fucking knives that he's got, you know? That's the problem, is it has no idea what it's trying to say.
Yeah.
This film has no idea.
If you know anything about pedophilia and stuff and child abuse, a lot of the times they will try not to leave marks so they can get away with it. It's a pretty stupid fucking pedophile if he's scratching the kids up and sending them home. Of course the parents are going to see something. Mm. The whole point of pedophilia is so that no one finds out.
And the other thing that really annoyed me is the difference in personality between Freddy and the dead Freddy, where Freddy seems to be this really kind of like meek, you know, individual, and then Freddy's this ridiculous, you know, sort of like
whereas
maniac.
He is a maniacal killer. Because, I mean, in the first series of films, the Robert Englund Freddy is described as being the son of a thousand maniacs. Mm. He was actually the offspring of a nun who got raped by all these mental... he's a nut job from word go, you know?
And he is personified evil.
That's right. Whereas this one, you take kind of this disturbed, pedophile, wannabe daycare worker, he's the gardener at a daycare center. You know, and it's just some guy who the kids all adore, right? And they're all hanging on him.
Like, I mean, exactly. Like, he hung out with these kids and, you know, got to the point of the thing. So there must be a good part of him. That is not Freddy at all.
No.
Yeah. No, and
Freddy is meant to be the personification of evil.
Yeah, exactly. And let's come back to Freddy himself and have a talk about how bad Freddy is.
Yeah, okay, and I'm going to say right off the bat, just before you go any further, that I love Jackie Earle Haley.
Oh, yes.
I love him.
I love him.
You guys do. I think he is a legend. This was not his film.
No,
but this is not his fault, in my opinion, because the two things that fail so miserably on this character is, as I said when we walked out of the film, they've taken this image of what they call a burns victim, where they've kind of stretched fake skin over his face.
He looks like something out of Brazil.
Burnt it. And then moved his eyes further back. Yes, that was actually what I was thinking of. Yeah. And then moved his offset
Brazil.
His eyes.
Oh, yeah.
His eyes seem to be further apart. So he just looks like a burnt fish. And I just could not take him seriously in any scene where I could actually see him. His voice is incredibly menacing. And his presence, when he is being violent, when he is being full-on, is actually really good. The problem is...
Well, even when he's being a bit sexual with the knives and meant to represent a penis, yeah, obviously we know that. Like, even that was, like, he did that well, and that was
freaky.
I think they are a metaphor, definitely. They're fucking throwing in obvious metaphors left, right, and center. There's no such thing as subtlety with films like this.
Not with Putnam, dude.
Yeah, really.
Not with anything Michael Bay is associated with,
anything he touches.
So I think Jackie Earle Haley... Josh and I talked about this after the film when I dropped him off at his house. And I said, it's almost like the producers said, we loved you in Watchmen. Mm. We want you to do that. Because all it is basically an extremified version of Rorschach, and it doesn't work.
No,
it really doesn't. And the times that really becomes apparent is towards the end of the film, where he has long dialogue speeches, where it's not just three or four lines, which a lot of the rest of the film is. It's broken up into these small sections of visceral dialogue. Some of them work, some of them just miss the mark completely. The scene where he kills, I think it's the second kid, and he has him hung up from the roof after he's killed him, and he basically says, I've got 7 minutes to play. That line worked. Mm. I liked that line. I liked the way it came out, and then instantly we were on to the next scene, and I was like, you just wasted a perfect...
I know, you felt like there was going to be something there.
if you're going to paint a picture of this incredibly violent killer,
yeah,
and you're going to go away from the original film's aspect of the playful... of him, the fact that he was a very kind
and
of
and he laughed a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
In the original, it was him laughing. Yeah. And
it was him
and
because
was
that
him
was disturbing.
Messing. Yeah. It was him messing with people. Mm. This is what he did. In this, there is no messing with people. It is
kidding.
Literally just him hunting them down and killing them. There is no waiting. There is no spending time, you know, freaking these kids out. It's get to them, kill them, and be done with them.
Yeah.
And the dialogue was very short. Towards the end of the film, where Nancy actually spends a reasonable period of time with this character, and his dialogue is delivered, because it's singular monotone, it stops working, because the longer he talks, the less you care about what he's saying, because none of it is in any way effective, because when he's throwing someone around or something, the dialogue just continually sounds like this. So there's no feeling that he's scared or worried or interested or enjoying himself.
Agreed.
It just sounds exactly the same.
And yeah, no,
really,
absolutely
really
agree.
Me.
Evil, but
and
it's
actually
like
it's a very one-note performance, whereas Robert Englund brought color. To the character Freddy Krueger. And it also lacks the fact that Wes Craven had a very clear vision of what he was doing in the first one. We're not talking about the sequels. Now, I actually think that the Nightmare on Elm Street sequels do progressively get sillier as they go on.
Three wasn't too bad, though. Three.
Have you watched it again lately? Because I watched it just the other night, and it's actually
Wizard
really high
alone.
Camp. Yeah, it's really high camp. With syringes on his fingers. And, you know, it's
I've said this before. Bar the last one, which I love for its own reasons, you could stick all of them together and make about a really good 5 to 6 hour film. Like
yeah,
if you
pretty
made
much.
Like a cut section.
There's moments in all of them. There's great Freddy moments. There's got like three's got the part where he turns into the big snake and eats her. And it's got,
no, more importantly, the bit where he cuts the dude open and
it does the puppet walk.
Fantastic.
Apparently he's been voted one of the top 10 goriest.
In fact, I think three is actually a lot of fun. And I like all of the Nightmare on Elm Street films. I think they're all a lot of fun. But the first one and the last one. Now, the last one, people sit there and go, Freddy's dead. Really, that's not the one I'm talking about. There is actually one more, which a lot of people kind of have skipped for some reason. It's Wes Craven's New Nightmare. That's the one where he came back to the project after all of this, because Wes Craven only made the first one and the last one. And he basically said that he came back because he had a new idea. And he did something really uniquely different with the entire concept. And it's fascinating.
I've not seen
It's fascinating.
That
Look, if you don't like the films, if you don't like the film, that's fine. But what you have to admire it for is the really odd way that it works. You are mesmerized by the fact that you are dealing with real people.
That's
playing
right. Because
themselves.
If you haven't seen it, in New Nightmare, you've got Wes Craven and Robert Englund and Heather Langenkamp playing themselves as well as playing the characters from
like
the first film.
One of my favorite scenes in that entire film is where they're all running away from they realize that he's come out, and there's the scene where they're standing outside the house that Nancy was a part of in the first one, and the father. The person that played the father and her are basically standing there, and she turns around and says, "Why did you call me Nancy?" And he goes, "Why did you just call me Dad?" And you realize that they have fallen completely into the role. And it's an amazing...
It is a really clever film. And a lot of people didn't know what to do with it, because it's not like any of the other Nightmare on Elm Streets. It is this... It's like Wes Craven said, "We're going to wrap this
I'm
up."
I'm sorry. Dude, I just have to cut you off for 1 second. Some snakes just put up. So we are following a burnt guppy running around in people's dreams. How exciting.
So true. And it shows you how exciting the remake is, the fact that we're talking about the original films.
Yeah.
But
the
reason why we're talking about the original films is because Wes Craven has this very clear idea in the first one in particular about the sense of dream. And he's got this very clear vision of when you move in. And dream and reality are so blurred. And when they're driving in the car and you think it's a normal day, but suddenly you start to look around and everything's kind of washed out. And then you've got the little girls doing the slow motion skipping. And you go, this isn't real. Something's wrong here, you know? And that you've got all these moments like that.
Exactly. And it was handled so subtly, because there'll be great scenes. Like one of my favorite in the first one is the scene in the original where, and I was talking to you about this, when they're sitting in the police office and she's sitting there and all of a sudden she realizes there's no one in the police office. And it's that great kind of moment where even you didn't see it coming.
Exactly.
In this one, they telegraph
everything.
And it's not just the dream sequences, it's the horror. Me and Dave were literally sitting there going, 3, 2, 1,
jump!
Yes.
3, 2, 1, jump!
The end scare, the final scene.
You're waiting for it.
Bad.
And it's so stupid.
And you sit there and you don't even go... You just kind of sit there and it happens and you're like, yeah.
Everyone knows me to be a chronic cinema jumper. I will jump at any moment. I am so highly strung.
And, you know, and to be fair, there were probably two or three moments in this where I did jump.
There was a moment because there were a couple
where
somebody
where he just suddenly comes up. Let's get something very clear. Jumping is not scary.
No.
Jumping is just a combination of loud music and something sudden happening on screen.
We should have gotten that Hitchcock quote, actually.
Well, that's right, we should have. But, you know, I mean, and the thing is, anything can make you jump. You can watch anything, it'll make you jump a little bit. That's not being scared. That's just being caught off guard.
Exactly.
All right? But the problem is that there are so many of those jump scares in this that three or four times where we actually did jump doesn't count for the 20-odd times where we kind of went, here he comes, turn around, there he is. Yeah. You know, and it's
if you can find the one scene that was in the trailer that I actually thought was handled beautifully and it really upset me is where she is starting to nap out finally. You know, she's losing track of reality and there's the great scene where she walks in to try and find her friend in the pharmacy and starts kind of envisaging and kind of falling in and out of a dreamscape where she's going from the pharmacy to the very famous piped hallway and basically moving in and out as he kind of runs his hands down the wall and things are falling off the shelves and flicking like, to him running his hands down the sides of the pipes and stuff like that. It's beautifully done. It was well handled. Yeah. And then straight after that, it just went to shit again. And it's just that's my problem with this film. Every now and then there's these great little moments where I'm like, if you had have stuck to your guns and made a decision on what you wanted this film to be, you could have done something awesome.
And those scenes looked really pretty as well.
Mm.
Like, they looked nice lighting, nice...
Mm. Oh, look, Samuel Bayer directs commercials. Like, he knows how to make things look pretty. The whole film is actually very handsomely shot.
Speaking of, though, there are a few incredible moments that me and Dave were very appalled with, which was the CG in this film.
All right, now, those who have seen the original Nightmare on Elm Street, one of the classic images from Nightmare on Elm Street is where she's asleep in the bed and he leans out of the wall and the wall stretches into the shape of him kind of leaning out over her. And in those days, they, of course, did a latex wall and he just pushed through it. And it's so effective. Well,
and it looks so real.
Real.
Because
that's
right.
It is real. It's this physical effect. Yeah. Samuel Bayer decided to do the same scene. There's actually three times in this film where he actually pays homage to the original with three direct shots. Mm. One in the bath with the claw coming out. You see it in the trailer. Mm. Another one with the body bag being lifted up and dragged.
Or if you count the one where the chicks are skipping.
Yeah.
The little girls.
Yeah, but they're not skipping
dress.
In the same circumstance, though. Yeah, we've got the same idea, but they're not. It's not the outside of the house and everything. Which I mean, I would love to have seen that shot recreated because it's such an iconic shot.
Now,
but
that looks so much better in Behind the Mask.
I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
That's homage.
And if you haven't seen Behind the Mask, we might actually talk about that in the after show, actually, because that's actually very clever. There's the last scene that he paid homage to is, of course, that lean out of the wall, and instead of doing it, which is much cheaper and much simpler to do a latex wall, he decided to CG that sequence, and it looks awful. It is just this tacky, shoddy piece of CG work, and you sit there going, why? When you could have just bought or stretched a piece of latex, painted it to look like a wall, and bent him out of there, the shot would have been a fraction of the cost and looked so much better.
And would have, actually looked real. And can I also say that the other one that I wasn't sure whether it was supposed to be a homage is where she comes through the roof?
Well, no, because in the original, she goes into the bed and then the fountain explodes.
No,
Johnny Depp, that's how Johnny Depp
dies.
But
at the same time, the reason that I thought maybe it was supposed to be a homage is because theoretically that was done through a roof. Like the entire room was built upside down and it came through
the
thing.
Yeah.
So there's a part of me that goes, was that or wasn't it? I would love to actually find that out.
Yeah.
But either way, the CG on that was even worse.
Where she bursts the roof with the blood. Yeah, just
that was just, that was like year one bad CG student. Like, that was like, that was not even, it didn't
even all the CG was year one bad CG. And that's the problem is that all of it looked like it was done by some hack company.
In an era now when we're getting to the point where we are perfecting CG and we're doing CG so well and we've seen fantastic CG.
Well, this is the thing, you know, people,
why are we going back to shitty CG?
Well, and exactly,
people are going to notice.
We've actually had, like Ben was on the show the other day going, oh, bad CG. I actually love CG. I think CG is brilliant. I think it can be utilized.
But now that we've done it well, why are we going back to shitty
CG?
Because it's so noticeable.
I watched last night on TV, Pirates of the Caribbean was playing. The first Pirates of the Caribbean was playing. And I came into it at the part where they're having the sword fight through the cave.
Yeah.
And there's the shafts of light coming through. And as they're sword fighting, they pass through the shafts and they turn into skeletons, turn back to human, turn into skeletons, turn back into human, all the way through this fight sequence. And I just looked at Katie and went, that is some of the finest CG work
okay.
ever committed to film. You know, and it is amazing.
If you
amazing.
Want to talk about amazing CG, let's talk about District 9.
And yeah. District 9, yes.
District exactly. 9, you have no even flick in your head.
Well, District 9 is actually a better example again because that's low budget.
Yeah.
So
that, I think District
9...
how
can you fuck it up?
I think District 9 and Nightmare on Elm Street are probably... close to each other in budget. They're probably both yeah. around... District 9 was about $30 million, and I think this Nightmare on Elm Street is probably $30, $40 million. I don't think it's... Because that's the whole idea of Platinum Dunes is not to make expensive yeah. films. So I don't think it's going to be... I don't understand how you could fuck this
yeah.
up. You know? This is really basic stuff. And if you're going to remake these classic films because you love these classic films so much, look at what made the classic films
use the
work.
Special effects
that's right.
that they
and
used
you can,
in the 80s.
There is actually a... there is an adam in films where they say... If it can be done real, do it. You only use CG or effects work or in the old
if
days of blue screen if you cannot achieve yeah. it in real life. If you can achieve it, do it. Because it's always going to look better physically.
Exactly.
You know? And this is why makeup will always look better than CG
look,
work.
It's the
you
rule
know?
Of thumb for Impressive. Guillermo del Toro. He was
absolutely.
Saying, he was actually
Great
saying
example.
That to us when we were actually talking to him mm-hmm. After Hellboy 2.
Or when Stan Winston died, he said, I don't want prosthetics and animatronics to die with Stan Winston. Like,
well,
it's
yeah.
something that he
yeah, no,
passionately
like,
wants to keep
a
alive.
A direct quote from that speech was basically him saying to us that he was like, one of the big things for me is if I can achieve it without using CG, I will use... that
yeah.
over
and,
you.
And in
so
fact one
better.
Of the one of the most amazing things about Hellboy 2 we're going into a slight tangent here but one of the most amazing things about Hellboy 2 was the sidekick character of the lead bad guy that huge monster with the big clubby fist thing because when I first saw Hellboy 2 I went boy that's a really good CG creature because he looks like a CG creature and yet he's completely real he's completely mechanical and you sit there and look at him and go that is amazing.
Yeah.
The fluidity to his face and to his body and everything looks like it's CG, and yet that is a fully realized creature on screen. Yeah. And you just go, that is brilliance, you know? And I just look at it and go, don't blame the CG.
Yeah.
Blame its usage. People are getting sloppy and they're doing stuff with CG just because they can.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's the problem, you know? You could not have achieved the effects in Pirates of the Caribbean 15 years ago.
No.
You can only do that now because of CG. Mm. And the work on that is phenomenal, you know? And we look at that and we look at something like Pirates or you look at District 9 or you look at Avatar.
Mm.
Avatar couldn't have been done any other way.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
this is the effects that he wanted to achieve. He wanted to have these 10-foot tall, super thin Na'vi.
I just
could not have done that
with
reality.
This is why, like, when we come back to the film, this is why I just don't understand what kind of director looks at a scene like that and goes, that'll do it.
Yeah,
like, that
exactly.
actually
that's,
is insulting
that's just
to me.
That's almost a sign of laziness.
Yeah, like,
you know?
If you actually put your scene... Like, I mean, I don't know these directors, but I'm saying if I was a director and I sat side by side between my scene and the original and I looked at them, I would feel, like, ill. I would be like, no, I have not achieved what this is supposed to be. Let's just do the latex.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. I mean, and yes, okay, the original Nightmare on Elm Street, there are a couple of dorky-looking things in it because of its the era it was made. It was 1983, after all, 84, whatever it was. Anyway, but the point is... 84. But it was... it had a couple of dorky things, but they still work.
Mm-hmm.
When he's walking down that junkyard hallway, passageway, and his arms are all stretched out really long, it looks fantastic.
Dude,
yes,
dreams,
it doesn't look real, but it looks fantastic.
Dude, dreams,
you know,
it doesn't have, when you're inside a dreamscape, it doesn't necessarily mean everything's going
to
be
no.
like 100%.
And you know now, if they had tried to do that scene, which they didn't do, thankfully, but if they tried to do that scene, they would have CG'd it like Mr. Fantastic in Fantastic Four, and it would have looked stupid, you know? So I'm glad they didn't do that. But anyway, look, long or short of it, I think we beat this to death. I think long or short of it is, do not go see the new remake of
Please
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Save
go down
yourself.
To your local video store.
Rent out a
rent
Nightmare
out
on Elm
the
Street.
First Nightmare on Elm Street. And if you really like it, go on and watch the rest of them. But really, it's the first. It's Wes Craven's Nightmare on Elm Street. This is where it's at. And if you really like that, look at the last one. Although I don't think the last one is available individually here.
Yeah.
How can I get a copy?
I think it's only available
it.
In
really
the box set.
I have it.
Yeah, we both have it. I've got the box set. If you buy the box set of Nightmare on Elm Street, you get all the films complete. If you buy them individually, you can only buy the first six, I think. Is that right? So, which is really stupid. But anyway, or if you are a U.S. listener, Amazon's got New Nightmare. You can get New Nightmare from there. So, it is available, and you can get it around. And it's well worth having a look at.
If we're going to name the show, I'd like to use Snake's current message in the chat room.
Guppy on Elm Street.
Please, yes. Let us use that as the title.
Guppy on Elm Street is the name of this episode.
Well done, Snake.
I think that is brilliant, Snake.
Well done to you, sir.
Well played. On that note, I think we're going to get ourselves out of here. So let's just do a quick little bit of housekeeping. We're going to say if you agree or disagree with our takes on anything that we have talked about, in particular our film review, we're always interested to know if you agree with us on our takes on this sort of stuff. Send feedback to feedback@geekactually.com, or you can leave us a voicemail, Sydney number 02-8011-3167. If your voicemail is interesting and short, we'll play it on the show and you can actually hear yourself heard. If you want Geek Actually merchandise, we've just actually updated the Cafe Press stuff with a couple new t-shirts because Josh and I have a particular favorite saying at the moment.
I'm going to buy one of those.
You can go to cafepress.com.au/geekactually and you can buy the new picnic shirts.
Oh, yeah.
Now, for those who don't know what picnic stands for, the shirts just say picnic. For those in the know, it stands for problem in chair, not in computer. Yeah. So, and it is anybody who has ever had to deal with servicing somebody else's computer, you wear your picnic shirt, they won't know what's happening, but you're insulting them to their face.
Yay.
All right. And so we have
in cheek.
So we have those now on sale at cafepress.com.au. We have a couple of friends out there that we just want to have a very quick talk about, which is of course the Real Junkies podcast, which you can find at weekendronin.com, or you can search for it on iTunes. They basically do film reviews like we do. They're a bunch of just great guys who sit around, drink tequila, and tell you what's on their mind about these films. So they're a lot of fun to have a listen to. We also have our friends over at the Movie Fan Cast. We have to be official. They are renaming and rebranding everything. So the Movie Fan Cast, our slide is old, but the Movie Fan Cast can be found on iTunes or at moviefanhouse.com. They are for fans, by fans, and they also do movie reviews, and we like them a lot. And Josh has a new website, which like to promote. RawDLC.com or DLC Live is the actual site name. Josh, tell us about.
Well, it is, of course, gaming related. As it says in that slide on the thing, it is news, gaming, and stuff. When we mean stuff, if something brings our attention, much like Dave, we will stick it up as well. it is also the link passage for everything that we will be doing over the next couple of weeks, which we will talk about later when it comes closer to the time. And it is also where you will find these shows for platforms if you are not going to Geek Actually to find those.
Fantastic.
We have all the links to that for the show coming up. And, of course, this week we are doing Red Dead Redemption. And
this is on platforms?
Yeah, yep. And our review will be probably quite a bit different to most of the ones you have heard. so tune in for that. It's going to be great fun.
Yes. So if you didn't quite catch that, because he kind of mixed two things together, we also have a second podcast, which is Platforms, and that's what Red Dead is being reviewed on. That's Monday nights at 8 p.m. Yep. live, or you can find it on the iTunes feed. Just search for Platforms in iTunes. And, of course, everything, all of our back episodes, everything we've ever done, you can find at geekactually.com. There's a search field there. You can search for anything you want. Everything is – because remember, iTunes only stores the last 20 episodes.
Yep.
So if you want all any back episodes or anything from any of our shows, Geek Actually Tech and what have you, it's all on geekactually.com. I think that's it. How do we find more about you, Celine, on the internet?
One question. What are we watching this week?
A-Team. Dun, 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 dun.
When,
dun, dun,
and because I'm sure there might be some people that may want to.
Okay, we should just bring this up very quickly. We run what we call the unofficial. I think it's going to become the official soon, I think. Although I think it's funny calling it the unofficial. That's why I'm going to make t-shirts. We're going to put them on Cafe Press.
Yeah, rock up to the
and every week the title seems to get longer because we haven't quite locked it down. So at the moment it's the unofficial Geek Actually Movie Fan Movie Fan Club or something like that. Anyway, basically every week we have to go see a film to review on this show. And so one week Josh and I kind of said, let's just put this out on Facebook and see what happens. And so we put it out on Facebook, and Celine and Ben, and we've actually had groups of up to 7 or 8 now, haven't we?
10
we've had so far.
Iron Man, there was 10 people.
Yeah, so we put it up in our forum at geekactually.com/forum. We also feed a little link to it onto Facebook as well, but we're trying to get all the traffic into the forum
Come
all. Everybody is welcome. It's just basically like a book club. We just all go see the film together. We generally meet about half an hour beforehand, have coffee, and then afterwards we usually stand outside the cinema bitching or praising the film. Yeah. So everybody is welcome. Keep your eye on the forum. There's actually a special section in the forum for it. And we always post up the movie times. It's usually Thursday night, last session. And it's for anybody who's there. Now, just to let you know, we're geographic location. It's generally around the eastern suburbs area, Randwick. It's because that's where we are, basically. So if you are in that area and you want to join us for a film, by all means, come along. It's a lot of fun. Make this very clear. Everybody pays their own way.
Yep.
All right. But if you're interested, just go to the forum and you can find out more about it. Now, before I was so rudely interrupted, how can we find out more information about you, Celine? You got anything to plug?
I'm just some chick. hey, I'm on Facebook.
Hey!
Add me. Just be like, I saw you on Geek. Otherwise, I'd be like, who the fuck is that? Ignore.
Yeah, actually, make that, that's ditto for everybody. If you want to friend us on Facebook or
on Twitter. Can you tell us where
you've
seen us?
That's fine, but I have no idea who you are.
Because I don't recognize their picture and I don't know their name, so I just go ignore whatever. This is just something.
You can put a little note in that friend request and just say, I heard you on, I want to follow you because I think you're great. All right? So... that's fine, but just let us know who you are. Otherwise, we could just think you're a spam bot.
Exactly.
Okay. So, what's your name on Facebook if they want to follow you?
Celine Roberts.
Celine Roberts. Yeah. Boy, that's boring, isn't it? We've had somebody in the chat room the entire show basically saying that you're Kelly Osbourne. And I've tried to tell them that you're not. And they're saying, no, it's Kelly Osbourne.
I've gotten that before.
It's like, no, it's not.
I used to have pink hair when she had pink hair. So,
Oh, wow. Trend following, huh?
Through high school, that was... I didn't actually know who she was
Kelly
Osbourne in high school.
Kelly
and
Osbourne's,
everyone was like, you look like Kelly Osbourne. I'm like, who is...
Kelly Osbourne's copying you.
Who is that? And they were like, you know Ozzy Osbourne? I'm like, what, that like guy who bit the head of the bat off him? No, what?
Yeah,
his daughter. And I was like, okay, cool.
Cool.
Good for her.
Whatever.
Nice. Yeah,
cool. All right, Josh, where can people find out more about you other than Raw DLC? Because they already know
that. RawDLC.com. If you're not going there, you can, of course, find me on platforms. I'm always there. I also have reviews that go up on geekactually.com. I've got another one hopefully coming this week. And apart from that, you can also find me on Facebook if you want. And that's obviously facebook.com/geekjosh.
Fantastic. And of course, you can follow anything about me by going to twitter.com/DaveMcVeigh or facebook.com/geekactually. And of course, just geekactually.com, which I am on all over the place. And I think that's it. I think we're done. Stay tuned for those who are in the live show for our after show, which is just going to be a rambling group of rants from a bunch of geeks. In the meantime, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we will see you all next week. Thank you.